Hi, I'm Korra.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
So you're like the Avatar or something. Big deal.
Who doesn't want a bison as their best friend?
You're the master of all the elements. You should know how to drive.
And then she does.
Does this mean I'm the master now?
Food for thought.
I've never had a girlfriend to hang out with and talk to before.
I'll destroy you.
I filmed the whole thing if you want to watch it.
The Avatar thanks you for your loyal service.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast, TradongBufang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Delaney.
Hello.
Jeff.
Hello.
Teresa.
Hi.
And Sam.
Hello.
Today we'll be discussing, after all these years, episode 1 of book 4 of The Legend
after
of Korra.
After all these years, it's only been a month.
Yeah, it's true, it has only been a month. And we are going to be up Fridays regularly for the remainder of book 4, which is probably going to be until mid-December. Going to be quite a journey. We're starting off with this, I don't want to influence initial opinions, but I thought it was pretty good, this pretty good episode here. And we'll see what we have to say. A lot to talk about the time skip. We're just going to get right into it. More info, if you're a first-time listener, more info on the podcast at the end. But yeah, quickly, news. Mike and Brian did 3 interviews recently. You can check them. The most important one is this IGN video interview. The most important thing to be revealed is that next episode, we don't know the title yet. I assume we might learn it tonight when they put out a new clip, maybe, is going to be all about Korra's journey from 3 years back into the present in terms of book 4 and beyond. So
what if it's just Korra?
Well, I think it will just be Korra. Like,
I meant like the episode name is Korra.
Oh.
That's what I meant.
No, that would be a really dumb name. The show is called Korra.
It would have to be the Korra.
Legend of Korra.
Yeah, so this is suddenly my most anticipated episode of Korra the season by far. Like more than the finale. Korra's Lost Days, yeah.
Korra's Lost Days.
I just think this has tremendous potential, so I'm hugely looking forward to next week. And in the meantime, I wrote off this week, and I kind of had low expectations, but turned out that was not the case. Let's discuss after all these years. Episode 1, written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Colin Heck, storyboarded by Olga, Eugene, Natasha, and Hyun Ju, I think is new. Maybe not, maybe I just don't recognize him. And yeah, What did you think of the episode? What's your excitement right now for Korra and the season? And what's your emotional state for this final season of Korra? Let's start with Delaney.
Well, this episode was, I don't want to use, like I've mentioned like on Skype and stuff, that I don't want to use very strong, like incredible or amazing or anything, but this episode was just great. It was solid. Really enjoyed it. My excitement for this season is insane. I don't know how I feel. Am I a person? I don't know how to react to
the answer is yes, hopefully.
I'm in love with Kuvira. I don't know where I am right now. Okay, you said excitement, episode. There was something else. There's a third one.
That's fine. That was good. But good episode, okay. Good excitement.
Yes.
Yeah. Jeff.
I feel like I'm like in some historical nexus, like I was there for book 4, and that was good, you know.
Yeah.
And like we're living anyways, it.
Yes, we're living it. We're here now. As far as the episode goes, I was very pleased. It was a very solid episode, and I just enjoyed watching it. It's a really good opener for the season. It just showed where everyone is, what they're doing. It did a lot of show, not tell, you know, because there's some details which we'll get into in the episode where they could have just as easily done it with exposition, but they decided to weave it into the story through acting. That was very nice.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that point. They did a pretty great job with exposition here. It was a lot of subtle exposition in the dialogue, and a lot of it was tied to these story events, too. I agree, that's very good. Also, we can quote Jeff on this. What did he say? I enjoyed watching it or something like that? Yeah, so that's Jeff's assessment. Okay, Teresa, what do you think?
I really, really enjoyed it. I think it was a great way to open up the season. I felt like it was the perfect amount of information that we needed to start off. Like, it wasn't like they filled us in on everything that happened since last season, and they also didn't leave too much of it, you know, to be like all cliffhanger-ish. I am in love with Kuvira. She's just,
mine.
No, I'll fight you. And the chipping was beautiful, even though there wasn't a lot of it. It was good. I was very happy.
It was good.
It comes like the subtle part.
I was a very happy person watching this episode.
Good, good. Sam, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to be that person.
The episode was
very average. I don't know what happened.
It happened.
I'm excited about the 3-year time skip, but a lot of it was just like, snore. Like, yeah, the part with like the airbenders and Kuvira, I was just like, oh my god.
Oh, that's the best part of the episode, Sam.
Okay,
I like Kuvira. I'm just excited about what's happening with Korra. That's the only thing I'm excited about, really.
Yeah, well,
right now.
Next episode. That's,
good.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to like that next one. This one's pretty average.
Yeah, for the record, Mel, I think, echoes your thoughts. I think she said average premiere episode.
Aren't we the same person?
Yeah, we'll get to your thoughts at the end. So I'm basically the opposite of the Mel and Sam camp. I am extremely bullish on this episode. Like, I thought, okay, I've seen it 3 times now. I think it is the episode of Korra that has the least wrong with it, if that makes sense.
the least wrong with it.
So, like, there's literally nothing bad or average or even just good. I thought everything was, like, I was interested in everything that happened. I really, really enjoyed it. I would say it was amazing. I do think it hit the highs at not necessarily as many points as I'd like it to hit, but there's maybe one or two scenes which were incredible. I initially was annoyed that it focused so much on Opal and Kai and not on Janora, so...
Janora was there for like a half second.
Janora, okay, so if you want to talk about the lack of Janora in this episode, Kieran and Shipka literally not credited in the credits because Janora did not say one line in this episode. So that's bad. But once I got over that, I started falling in love with Opal more, and I just grew way more invested in those scenes.
And we got confirmation of Jinkai, so
I was so
obvious. And,
I squealed.
Yeah, and basically, I think there's some lines you could say are maybe on the nose or stale from Josh's script, but I think that overall it is incredibly well done. Expository introductory episode that like I said before, I think a lot of the exposition is very well weaved into the dialogue that we get. I think most of all, this is an incredible introductory characterization episode for Kuvira, and the best intro character episode since Azula in 201. This is totally what that reminded me of. The Avatar State is only a tolerable episode because of the Azula scenes. And that, like, Aaron just writes incredible, incredible dialogue for Azula there, and Kuvira's characterization is astounding, and I can't wait to go over that scene in Act 1.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I feel like this season is just going to be Dylan's sympathy farewell tour for Korra, where I just love every episode, despite any sort of flaws.
Sympathy farewell tour.
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm like, I was in book 2. Everyone's like, oh, it's horrible. It's like, oh, fun.
Yeah. I mean, any sort of flaws I might overlook just because, you know, I don't know emotions for this scene. But I will defend my thoughts on this episode, and I anticipate it grading it higher than all of you. Challenge. We'll see in an hour. I challenge you here. Okay. We have a lot of, I do hear whatever that is, someone.
That's Jeff.
I do hear, we do have a lot of specific details to go over because there is so much exposition worked into the dialogue I outline the events of the episode and it's pretty long. So let's try to move somewhat quickly and we have a lot of thoughts from you guys afterwards. So we start, I think, in a really unique and great way. I think we overlooked this because this is a clip that Nick released. Oh, I should say, based on the clips that Nick released 3 clips from this episode this week. And I didn't have a good feeling for this episode because of them. It seemed like we would just have, well, it was only 2 because we had the Korra clip, which just turns out from his next episode. I thought we were going to have Korra. I thought we were going to have Opal and Kai. And I thought we were going to have the Asami and Republic City stuff. And I was like, that's just going to be too much stuff and it's going to be too widespread. But it turns out this episode is very focused actually on two events, and I think it does a really good job. And we start with this great weight update. They continue to use Shiro Shinobi's previously on update sequence creatively and way better than I would have expected. I think it was an incredible choice. Yeah, it's framed as like a Republic City tourism video.
Which is really great.
It's really interesting, yeah. And again, I think we overlooked this because we've seen this a week ago. If you're paying attention, IGN released this clip. But it's just very well done. And there's important updates that we have to go over for the world and Republic City in this time. Hold on a sec. So we start with Air Temple Island, which apparently has become a hub for the new Airbenders.
Which makes sense, but at the same time,
it also is fairly northern, so location-wise, I don't know if it makes that much sense. You would think maybe in a central location in the Earth Kingdom, but it's probably not safe,
Of Airbenders to begin with, as far as we know.
Well, yeah, but if you're going to dispatch them to the southern Earth Kingdom, it would take a while. Next we go to Avatar Korra Park.
The worst name.
Well,
listen, I love the fact that she has a park and she has a statue, but can we please name it something other than Avatar Korra Park?
Well, it's in Republic City, so you can't get worse than that.
I mean, no, like, oh, I can't, such a bad name.
You forget how much we hated that name when Korra started Republic City. Like,
oh, it's we hated that name?
We hated that. It seems normal now, but that is just a terrible name for a city.
Well, that's how I feel about Avatar Korra Park right now.
It's new. I don't know. I like it. I like how much this highlights the absence of Korra here. I think it's a great way to bring this up without having her in the episode. Shiro says, "We've missed her these past 3 years," and stuff like that. And we see the giant statue of Korra. It's pretty great. They're pretty fast at making statues in Republic City.
I mean,
I don't know. Maybe it's because it's
sculpture probably isn't
benders.
Hard.
Yeah,
we have earthbenders.
Yeah, Sam, so. What's analyze sculpture in the Avatar world with earthbenders?
Sculpture in the Avatar world, it's probably really easy. Probably. It doesn't take like a month. To carve a toe.
What if you were an earthbender? How much easier would it
all be? It would be super easy. I get so much work done. I have a month long deadline for each project. Be like, boom. An hour. Done.
It seems one of the easier things that would be improved, right? Just instant improvement based on bending in the world. Sam is a sculpture major, by the way.
I am a sculpture major.
The third thing we have is the Spirit Wilds, where spirits and people harmoniously live together, like this whatever here. What do they call it? What does he call them?
Conjure.
Old Conjure, yeah.
It's like not an okay word. Like, and it's not nice.
Referring to Gamu from Book 1.
That guy.
Yeah, he has a name, if you will recall. He actually did stuff in the finale, although we block out the Book 1 finale, but he was there.
I don't know.
Yeah.
With the party line.
I have not rewatched the Book 1 finale in years.
I have happier thoughts on it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I actually have those episodes ranked very highly, so I don't know. So, yeah.
I wonder if like the whole spinning the Spirit Wilds is like a tourist attraction is sort of President Raiko trying to make a good thing out of a bad thing.
Yeah, that was kind of my impression. Like, I doubt they're living that harmoniously, right?
I love how there's like a mom and her kid walking, and I'm like, really? This is really accurate. It was definitely effective.
Yeah, that, and it's certainly the most interesting part of anything they're saying. Anytime they're going to bring the spirits up, I think it's going to be a huge interest.
When they mention that in the interview, don't they, that how this is like the one thing that ties back from Book 2 into Book 4?
Well, Mike a few times says Unuvatu's vines in the city are going to play a major role this season. I have no idea what that means, right? Like, what are they going to do? They're going to become sentient?
We have plant people now.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Okay, but
Kuvir is going to come and liberate Republic City.
Well, it seems like Kuvir is eventually going to.
No, Kuvir is Ivy, and she comes.
Yeah, okay,
in.
That would make more sense. Okay, so now we have more exposition. We go to Raiko, who's making a speech. We have a nice transition between the newsreel and Raiko talking with Asami there, and he says, "We need to thank Asami for modernizing Central Terminal." He talks about Prince Wu, spelled W-U, not W-O-O, like a Survivor contestant last season, taking his place on the Earth Kingdom throne soon. And there's a new rail system. You kind of missed this line, but this is actually important later in the episode. A new rail system connecting the Earth Kingdom to Republic City, presumably invented by Varric, although I think he credits Asami with it, right? I'm not sure.
Don't we all credit Asami with
it?
It's Asami and Future Industries.
Yeah, so he's Future Industries. Well, he's not really anymore. I don't know. It's been 3 years. We can't tell. So then we have Wu hitting on Asami. So they released, this was part of the clip, the first 2 minutes they released, this painted Wu extremely unsympathetically. I think, as I'll talk about later, I actually think Wu is, like, a fairly sympathetic character. It's I weird. Agree. Like, this totally makes him seem bad, but I actually like him
I after really the rest of the episode. Scenes.
Yeah. He's like, wow, this guy's not that much of an idiot, yeah. Right?
He's just a dork. It's yeah, great.
It is pretty great. He says, Asami says to him, I do like the idea of putting you on a train and sending you far, far away.
Asami is taking no, she's
no prisoners there, yeah. Sassy Asami is the greatest. I will say that I thought Asami, this being like the first thing Asami said in the episode, was maybe too abrupt, right? Like, we're getting right into it a little soon, but it was a great line, so they had to get to it. Wu says he is extra human, superhuman. And then he wiggles his eyebrows a lot, and it's great. It's pretty great.
The eyebrows, that was some intense eyebrow game.
Yeah.
The eyebrows are warp speed best.
Say what?
Seeing gist of his eyebrows going at warp speed is just the best.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. There's like an Adventure Time reference with him just doing the eyebrows.
The fact that he said superhuman, I wonder if like they think about that in terms of like the Avatar and Benders, or just kind of like, what the heck does superhuman?
Yeah, how does, they're getting really bad with these things that shouldn't exist in the Avatar world.
Yeah.
They don't have superheroes. Okay. And they just blatantly have another Jeep
except
here.
Opal.
And
Opal's a superhero.
That's true. Opal is basically a superhero. Tons of Opal love coming, but we're not there yet. Mako comes and gets rid of Wu. It's not clear whether he's making this up or not, right? It seems like it. Like, he was his excuse, yeah. The Reiko needs you for King stuff. It seemed fake, but...
But then they actually show him talking.
Yeah, so
I don't know.
Well, it's not like the King. It's not like Raiko's going to say, "Oh, I actually don't need you anymore. Go away."
Yeah, that's true. It could have just worked.
I don't know. Right? You know, actually, he probably would do that, even though he's the king. President Raiko is pretty terrible. He might actually do that.
Oh, what are you talking about? Raiko's such a nice guy. Anyway,
Mako, I'm not sure.
So Mako is now Wu's bodyguard. Great plot.
Their dynamic throughout the episode. Yes. Like, he's not subservient.
Yeah, it's really...
It's not a professional relationship. They're like buds.
They're kind of like buds, but at the same time, Wu's acting really casual, but Mako's kind of acting professionally.
Yeah.
At the same time, Mako gives him sass, but Wu doesn't seem to care and still loves him. It's really weird, yeah.
Like, I made note of that just on my rewatch. I was like, this is weird. This is not... And it's kind of, like, you kind of don't expect it from Mako. Like, you would either think Mako's like, I'm not listening to you at all, or Mako would be super professional, but they're both on this weird middle path.
It's a good weird.
It is good weird.
No,
I agree.
It's definitely a good weird. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. And I think that this is a reason that Wu is sympathetic to me in this episode, because you could totally see him being rude, not accepting Mako's like sass to him, but he just accepts it and loves him anyway, right? Like,
he just like, he thinks they're best friends.
Yeah, like I think that's a really,
it's kind of adorable, actually.
I think it is very adorable. Yeah,
it's
like
cute.
I think it's great. We'll talk more when we get to their dynamics. So Mako but first we have Masami to talk about. Mako and Asami reunite.
It's time to show.
And Brit is not here. Okay, let's go to fast forward to Brit's comments to see what Brit has to say. Our resident Masami shipper. At least my ship has had a conversation in the past 3 years. Side eyes, Issa and Delaney.
Like, appreciate that.
Brit's just getting kind of sassy here. Okay, I will say, people on Tumblr, especially shippers who don't ship Masami, are going to be very quick to completely shove to the side any thoughts of these interactions being romantic. But I think there's certainly something there.
They've obviously haven't seen each other, so
yeah. So it's hard to tell whether this is just old friends or like rekindling of a flame, right? Because there was a flame. You can't really.
Yeah, they're definitely, obviously.
Flame, he's a
fire. Mako dated everyone. Obviously, there's.
Obviously, there's a flame. There's always a flame with Mako. He's
exactly.
A fire.
I totally intended that. And I don't know. I'm inclined to say that they're feeling things for each other. What do you guys think?
I didn't get that.
First episode.
Okay, full disclosure. I may or may not be troll shipping Masami this season.
Dylan is troll shipping.
So whenever they interact, expect me to bring up that.
it's like the Zuki. Like, he's troll shipping Masami.
Anything that everyone hates, I will ship like a lot. and people are seeing.
And now except we need Tara, to have a hidden Masami segment.
Yeah, I think we will have this. This is see, that's the thing though. This episode doesn't need hidden Masami. It's clearly here. They're talking right here. Okay. Next is Bolin coming in a few days for the coronation. So which is in like I think they say.
I like how excited Mako got talking about Bolin.
Oh yeah,
wow, yeah. It's like he actually is showing love for his brother and not just annoyance. That's nice.
I noticed on my rewatch that the way Mako and Asami are talking to each other, it's kind of like a familiar but still slightly awkward encounter.
Yeah, I agree.
Like so, like I mean, I don't know, and I personally don't care how they talk from Asami.
To that kid you talk to all the time in that one class, like freshman year, but now you're like a junior.
Except you dated that kid at some point too.
No,
so, yes. Nah. So, after
three, I mean, they haven't talked to each other in 3 years, and they all, and it's pretty clear that. I mean, they didn't, like, leave off. Like, they didn't leave off on, like, bad terms, but they didn't leave off on the best of terms. So it's kind of like, we're friends.
Do you think they had makeout sessions?
When?
During, like, the interval of 3 years.
No, but they didn't see each other. That's the thing.
Are you sure?
Well, they could have.
They could have, like...
If they saw each other, then yes is the answer. Because Masami for life. So let's continue.
I'm going to be very thoroughly pleased with this.
Cora, I'm glad. Me and Britt are on the same team right now. Cora's getting in tonight, and Asami says, she can't wait to see her.
You know how excited Asami got?
She got very, okay, so real talk for a second. Asami is very disinterested in, like, everything here.
Yes,
and then they mention, and then Mako, and then they talk about Cora, and then she like starts smiling and stuff.
Asami, the same person. The only thing I'm interested in right now is Cora.
Because Mel is Asami, so obviously I'll be Asami too. Jesus. Y'all are the same.
We're all the same person.
So I think
so obviously Cora Asami.
Yeah, so I think there's a legitimate read. No, but in all seriousness, I think there's a legitimate read to the scene that Asami has feelings for Cora in this. Like.
Yay.
Like I think that's a legitimate way to read the scene, and I do read it like that. So
that's how I read it.
Like best friends or romantic or not, like she's missed Cora very much.
She certainly has. She's certainly bringing up the dependency she had on her last season. Mm. Like of course she wants to see her again. But then it is also of note is that face is right next to the when she said the old team Avatar back in the city after all these years. I don't remember which one of those says that, but.
That's when Asami says that.
All right. So yeah, so she's like covering up her feelings, obviously, by saying
that's
something.
That's
really.
What everybody does.
Yeah. So yeah, there was the Masami scene, and
then the Kurosami.
And the Kurosami scene next. Wu is talking to Tenzin, Raiko, and Lin. Yeah. And he says, then we learn that Wu's going back to the Earth Kingdom after coronation. And we get one of the best lines of the episode, which is him talking about the Earth Queen choking, who's his great aunt, he says, and then may she rest in peace afterwards.
How did Quay have more than one kid? I still don't understand how he had one kid, so now he had more than one
kid. So that's what that implies, the great aunt relationship.
They were
adopted.
You got busy.
The may she rest in peace. That was hilarious. I actually really liked him from that.
Yes.
I don't know.
Spectacular.
Yeah. Insensitive, yes, also hilarious. Also, it's been 3 years and only been a month for us, so they have more
not
space.
Too soon.
They have more space.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Not too soon.
Not too soon. And they say it's pretty much stabilized.
Pretty much. You're probably not going to get assassinated.
Yeah. I thought the scene was on point,
Lin
too.
Was
but I like
it. Him. It was great.
Lin's pretty great in this episode. Lin with Mako later is great, yeah.
It is. It's amazing. I can't wait to talk about it.
Okay, now we go into the Earth Kingdom time, which apparently is a state. The Earth Kingdom has states now.
The state of Yai.
How big is this thing?
Yeah, the city did not seem that big, but maybe it's just a... And they talk about provinces, states, and it just seems like a town. And it's Yai, but it's spelled Y-I. Not YAI, so I don't know.
Who knows anymore?
Yeah, so anyway, there's bandits. Opal and Kai are there.
Oh, by the way, we know this from transcripts?
It was the transcript, yeah. It says YI, the Nick.com transcript, which isn't official, but it's the only thing we have, right? So Opal and Kai are there. They stop these bandits. There, they say the airbenders are here. What do we think of
the majestic squirrel suit?
Yeah, with the new squirrel suits. Okay, we talked about the suits already, so we don't have to.
But
what
now
do
they look majestic.
What do we think
of this?
What do we think of this action sequence?
They're superheroes.
Great. Yes, they're superheroes.
I thought this was underwhelming compared to the later one, But I'm fine with that because I like that the episode builds up. Yeah.
This is one of those scenes that would have been unbelievable if we hadn't seen it already.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Because Nick gave us this as a clip, and I think that did ruin it a little bit. It's annoying. I would prefer no clips, honestly.
And it's great, like, the flight, like, even though it's an underwhelming fight scene in comparison to the later one, when they land and he's like, the airbenders are here. Like, it's great. It's just great.
The airbenders.
Okay, so now we meet the governor, who is only called governor of this state, apparently.
He doesn't have a name.
He doesn't, but he is voiced by Robert Morris, who's a pretty big name. He is Bert Cooper on Mad Men. He is also a...
are they getting the whole cast of Mad Men on
TV? Well, that's the second one, yes. Kiernan Shipka is on Mad Men as a regular. Janora. And Robert Morris was a Broadway star in the 60s. It's pretty interesting, his life. But yeah. And he, of note, is the last episode of Mad Men that is aired, and they stopped after their season. He was a huge focus of the last season, and it was crazy, and it's a big television moment. So this is like a big casting, but it's for a character who doesn't have a name and is only in one episode. They've done this before, but it's interesting. So apparently he called Master Tenzin, and I should just say, I think Robert Morris
he's won a Tony.
He has won a Tony. Robert Morris is incredible with all of the governor's dialogue. Like, I love how he pronounces everything. He has a very he has a unique way of talking. So he says, Master Tenzin. I like how everyone refers to Tenzin as Master Tenzin, apparently.
Yes.
And he called him to send the airbenders.
He called him.
Yeah. And
meanwhile, we can't get a phone call or communication to the South Pole to figure out where the heck Korra is.
I mean, they text her, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. And Opal says that they're spread pretty thin right now, the airbenders.
Because there's 12 of them.
So the question is, are we going to get a episode just about Ryu and Otaku in some town? They're paired up, yeah.
Where are the other airbenders?
Yeah, that's true. We didn't see any of them. Okay, so now we get to what I believe is the most brilliant sequence of the episode.
Yes.
Not just because I'm in love with Kuvira.
And everyone
is in love with Kuvira.
Okay, it's not fair right now. We have short haired Korra, Asami, Kuvira, and Opal. Like, that's too much. Yeah, that's too much.
Cute girls.
Yeah, it's really like a lot right now to handle. Kuvira, yeah, so okay, they're on a train. Was this train touching the rails? That's my first question.
I didn't notice, but the way it's built, like looking at the tracks afterwards, like when she has them all bound to it, it looks like it could be magnets.
So yeah, the reason this is notable is because Varric is working with magnets
and
last
season.
And they
move very, very fast. Like the train travels rather quickly.
It could be a magnetic train. Yeah, Jeff, do you have any thoughts on this? Is Jeff here? I don't know. No, he's not. We'll get his thoughts when he comes back. So right when we get on the train, we get to the start of Jeremy Zuckerman's most brilliant sequence of the episode. These just heavy drums and this music starting.
Oh, I love it.
And it seems like we're going to see Kuvira associated with this drums theme. I assume this is Kuvira's theme, just heavy drums. It's great.
it is.
And I was just in love with this. And
so, I like it because, like, last season with the Red Lotus, a lot of their music had very, very prominent violins. And now, like, the Earth villain has, like, the big, like, the powerful drums. I don't know. I just think it's an interesting choice. And I love it. I love the music.
Yeah. Jeff, we were talking about the train and whether it was touching the tracks, whether it would be a magnetic train. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I'm thinking it is. So, for a couple reasons. First, we have Varric's whole spiel on magnets
from last season.
Then we have Kuvira's magnet stuff at the end of this sequence when she like magnets everyone together.
Yeah.
And plus the train just looks like it's a maglev. Like it does. Now I can't see any magnetics, like any levitation. But that's, I mean, you never see those anyways because the distances are so tiny. So
we would see other things.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So you think this is all magnets? Yeah, I think I agree with that. And if so, they're way ahead of our technology, right? From the 20s or 30s.
We have magnetic.
Relative to the 20s or 30s.
Yes. Definitely relative. They also have mecha tanks still.
They have mecha tanks? Yeah. What?
And the mech suits are also they've had magnets in those since book one, so it's not really surprising.
It would be interesting to see if they're the places they are ahead of us relative to the 20s in technology are only because of magnets. Is that could that be the case?
Well, because the mech suits also are self powered, which is something like we can't do right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Like you have to drop a huge battery to the thing, so they've got slick there.
And that's a lot of, it's kind of like steampunkish with the mecha tanks, because like they run on steam, like you can, like when Asami's in it, you can tell. And so it's like steampunk mixed like a steam with...
It's these new ones are too small for that, so I'm wondering what they run on.
Yeah.
Maybe magnets.
Maybe magnets, yeah. That'd be interesting. It is, either way with the train, it is very jarring to see this like very modern, relative for our thing even, train in this just... this old-fashioned Earth Kingdom town.
Well, it's like the outside looked like the appearance of the train on the outside looks like they tried to make it like look not as conspicuous, but it's like how fast it travels and the tracks themselves are really, really modern.
Yeah, so it's a good point. Anyway, so back to the scene. Yeah, the drums music.
And I was a bit confused at first, like, oh,
what? All right. So, we see Bolin, his hair, and. Yes. He is he's a very smooth introduction, I think. Like, he comes up and it's like good news or whatever, and we're 90% there apparently
for conquering the
Earth Kingdom. Good news. Varric and Julie are there with the celebration tea.
Will the Earth Kingdom ever catch a break? It gets conquered every season.
It's reunited. What are you talking about? It's reunited.
Right.
She's the reuniter. Yeah. And there's
The great uniter.
Then bandits on the tracks. But Kuvira says, nope, don't send them out. I'm going to take care of this. I'll take care of the bandits myself. And she looked incredible. And then she goes out.
And I think it's important to note that the way she blindfolds them, that's really... it's very intriguing. Like, that's not something.
Okay, so well, first let's talk about that. So she goes. We have this incredible fight sequence. She's been, as we talked about in the trailer discussion, she's taking the metal strips, which appear to be magnets, off of her bicep area, and then just combating like 8 different people all around her. I mean, this is the classic case of everyone moves towards. Or, like, everyone's attacking, like, the same thing at once, so it's easier to fight them. But it's okay, because Kuvira's incredible, and we have this... At one point, she does all this intricate sequence, and we have this whoosh-whoosh sound effect, and she restrains them all.
Bandits whoosh-whoosh. She, it's the best outline.
She locks them all together, and there's beastry, some type of magnets going on.
Well, it's almost like she activated it, because she slammed them all together. It was really interesting.
I wouldn't say they're magnets, per se, but she has, like, ferrokinetic powers.
Yeah, well, it's...
That.
Yeah. I was about to say, there's a very good chance that metal benders have the ability to magnetize metal.
Or at least she does.
That's,
this is, I don't know about this.
Dai Li also had this power, according to some
people, I don't know. Anyway, then she ties them to the tracks. Okay, this action sequence, I believe, is just such a great, and the drums music obviously kicks up during this.
And the angles on, like, it's just incredible.
It's just very... interesting. It's just great for just showing Kuvira in terms of like her, she's skilled, confident. She's just,
it's really telling of her character.
The way she puts it over her eyes and restrains them instead of just like attacking them, right? You get a sense of like restoring order from her fighting.
It's very calculated.
Yeah.
Like, she's not just fighting.
Precision
it's not,
to like bend a band of metal around someone's face and not kill them.
And
like,
binds, and she's binding them with her bending. It's not just like disabling them. She has to use the metal to get both of their limbs together. It's insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is the best scene. I mean, it's the best scene of the season. That's not saying much. I think I think it's probably top three for books 3 and 4 combined. I can't think of what's better, right?
I would agree.
I don't know. I don't know.
I was really nervous, like, thinking that the train was pointed forwards, like, we're going to run you over.
That's
true. This was the sequence we got in the first promo, and it was like, what are they? They're on some sort of table. But no, it's the train tracks, and they're, like, being restrained. They're, like...
I didn't even realize it was the train tracks until she said, I hope another train doesn't come along. I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah, the train tracks, And they appear to be bound metal-wise, but also could be the weight of the metal.
It does...
Magnets-wise, I don't know.
It looks like they're... Like, I feel like they're stuck to the middle. Like, I feel like
I think they're magnetized to the
tracks. I think there's a lot of magnet.
Yeah, I think so. But yes, she says, "You are the bandits who have been causing chaos where I have been trying to establish order." She says, "It is a good day." She has that line about stop groveling. It's a good day. It's an opportunity to rehabilitate and become productive members of your nations.
She says, "You were lost," which I think was a very, it's a very interesting line.
You're lost.
Pledge allegiance or stay here. So I don't know if I loved this. It's like, it's interesting.
Some of the things she says are really neat, and then other things, it's like, that's a little too much. Like,
well, I don't know if it's nose. Too much. I think it's interesting. She seems...
Well, I meant to say, like, on the nose. Like,
well, yeah, certainly her dialogue here is on the
nose.
Is
she a metaphor for America?
I don't know. She could be. She could be. I mean, well...
The great uniter? I don't think so.
She's very... we'll talk about this again, because she does it again, but she's very intent on making... her people pledge allegiance to her, not just conquer, because she doesn't want to seem like a conqueror, right? She wants them to join her, not conquer them. Okay, well, no, the more interesting discussion point here about her philosophy, and this is a good time to talk about her philosophy, because the line, you're the bandits who've been causing chaos where I've been trying to establish order. Right, so this is a direct comparison to Zaheer of the previous season. So in Zaheer we had a anarchist villain with trying to take down world leaders. This, with Kuvira, we seem to be having a person who is trying to establish civilization and order at all costs.
She's fighting directly what we established in Book 3, like
right,
she,
which is the concept, which makes sense plot wise, yeah. And it's also interesting thematically.
Well, it also makes sense as to, like, as you were saying, a plot wise, and I'm assuming you mean like this is why she's been able to do this. This is why she's gotten this far.
Well, it's why this happened. It's why she started in the first place,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It should note that we're going to refer to Kuvira as a villain throughout, because she's going to be the villain of the season, but she's not presented as such in this episode. She's presented.
All of the viewpoints of the different characters are being, of all of their characters, are their viewpoints are being presented, and it's, we're going to see how these evolve, these all relate to each other.
I think we are supposed to agree with Opal in the episode.
Yes.
However, I would not say that this is a villain introduction like Azula's in 201. I think this is an antagonist introduction.
Like, these are two, there are like two movements, and we have this new character mostly new character. She was introduced last season, and then we have all the other characters in direct opposition to her.
Yeah,
they're trying to establish Wu, and then Opal's like, no.
From a sensibility of the people who are watching the show's perspective, Kuvira is going to be a much more engaging villain inherently than Zaheer, because of the extreme that she is representing is closer to our own philosophies and our own societal beliefs. Sam makes a good point when she says she's America, because... America is very much on the side of order and civilization, and so are basically every other country in the world. We're very far away from the anarchism of Zaheer. A lot of people just didn't like that Zaheer's speech of his motives and stuff, because they was like, I heard a lot of, oh, he's so childish, his beliefs are so dumb. But that's only because they're in such opposition to our own. This is much closer to ours, and so she's probably more of an inherently interesting figure, because she is kind of just presenting what we think, maybe notched up a little bit more than we do, right? We're just very civil, much on civilization and having people in charge and stuff like that.
And my hopes continue. Oh, sorry, continue, Jeff.
I'm definitely not a foreign policy expert at all, but it's like, because America does not force countries to pledge allegiance to us in order for us to send them aid, right? As contrast to Kuvira's policy.
Yeah.
That's a good difference. We do not theoretically do not do
right.
that. Yeah.
So it seems like we're sort of like, America's all about stability. We want the world to be stable. We don't really need everyone to join us. We just want people to be stable, and so we'll help where we can and let people themselves.
Join or die.
Kuvira
wants a lot of unity. She's a unifier. So if people don't join her, she has no incentive to help them, because they're not helping her.
So from that perspective, you can compare it to England of like the England dynastic, whatever. There's a time in America's history where we were closer to, right, Kuvira then.
Well, actually today, like, and I'm, my focus, like going off of what Jeff said, it's not just a, like, it, this doesn't necessarily relate to America simply on our foreign policy, but our internal policy. Like, I studied for a while thinking about, you know, how does dual citizenship work in the United States? And the reason Americans have issues getting dual citizenship in other countries is because, in other citizens, like, maintaining dual citizenship, you have to pledge allegiance to the United States and swear off all other allegiances. So Kuvira is, this is individual. She is not, she is hoping, like, she's trying to get these different provinces under her control, but she starts with individuals. She wants their allegiances first.
I think it's a good point. We do make people, like, in terms of we as in America, they just, by just all the coasts here happen to be American. We do all make people pledge allegiance to our country. We basically make kids in school recite the Pledge of Allegiance. This is something that Avatar's already kind of mocked with the headband, right?
Yes.
And so this seems like the my general point, though, without getting to, I mean, we did get into specifics, but the general point is, even if America isn't as extreme as Kuvira in terms of the order thing, in terms of having large central governments and civilizations, it is inherently order, which is the opposite of what Zaheer was representing, right? Yes. Right. So this is a contrasting new viewpoint for the antagonist slash villain to have, and I think it is one that we are more likely to agree with. Okay. Act two of the episode. So we are, I don't know where, oh, it's Mako and Wu, the buddy cop dynamic here. They mentioned there would be a dinner at Air Temple Island later tonight. Mako doesn't know why Wu is leaving so early, but he says it is a spa day and a minimum of 4 hours are required. So that's pretty great. Rejuvenating tea leaf skin wrap.
The detail with which they describe this.
Yeah.
And then Mako's just like, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
Like, ew.
Mako, yeah, Mako pretty, not into that. So I guess one point to make here. I think Mako's fairly sympathetic throughout the rest of this episode, but I think there's a legitimate point to be made that he's very gender roles binary in this scene. He's just, like, extremely dismissive of anything. That's not, like, manly, right? This spa day thing.
And we would think that Bolin would be all for it. Like,
seems like Bolin would be more into this, yeah. Mako does has been presented before as gender roles, very, very binary gender roles-y. And that's something that I haven't liked about him, and it's something that continues to be now. But he does do other, it is a relatively minor thing, although still existing. They walk outside, the crowd reacting. I think funnily, they maybe name Prince Wu. One of the reasons they do is because everyone's saying Wu. Are they saying Wu or are they saying Boo? So do they like him or are they chanting his name? I don't know. The crowd's kind of divided. It's an interesting portrayal. Yeah.
I mean, you have, like, because there's all these people who are booing him, and then you have the two girls where he goes and stands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's enjoying that. How old do we think Prince Wu is?
18.
Yeah, I think he's a teenager.
I don't know. Interesting. Yeah. Seems younger than Mako. Yeah, I don't know. Kuvira supporters apparently throw pies at him. That's
Can we
Mako
talk
says,
about the
anyway.
Supporters for a minute?
I thought
one of them, like, was Kuvira.
Did she? That was what I was going to say with their uniforms. Like, my thing with the supporters is it's weird that they're all wearing matching outfits and their hair, like, her hair is styled like Kuvira's. Like,
and
is this
all the boys have the same haircuts?
Yeah, like, is this are the
Olin and Varric?
Yeah, like, are they actually supporters or are they agents sent by Kuvira? Mm-hmm. And if they're supporters, do they just want to mimic the military? Like, they just want to look like them so much? In this way, and one of my friends texted me, we were talking about the episode, and he was talking about parallels, and he was thinking Kuvira's, you know, he was relating it to World War II and how they are he was seeing her as a kind of a Hitler figure, and this could be like, you know, like the Hitler Youth, and if they're actually supporters and they're mimicking their style, it could be.
I wonder how much they thought about this.
It's weird. They're mad.
It's not clear what they're doing here.
Because if they're supporters, it's
and then it gets
line with, yeah.
It gets more weird because they throw pies, right?
Yeah, they're like actually enlisted in her army. That's disgraceful and ridiculous.
I doubt Kuvira would send people to throw pies. So I don't
know. Like, because if they're agents, that's weird. And then it's either way, it's weird. Like, it's just.
And what the reason, I don't think they thought this through. I think from a storytelling perspective, they're trying to establish a conflict between Wu and Kuvira here. Like, they're going to be opposing forces, theoretically. When Kuvira finishes the uniting, and she's supposed to step down and make way for Prince Wu, but she assumedly won't do that.
Yeah.
So the pies. I think this is a place where the episode could lose you, because it doesn't really make sense why people are throwing pies. And it
I was
seems
like all excited
of,
for some yeah, like, really awesome assassination attempt, and then I was like, oh.
It seems kind of ridiculous and childish. Did anyone have that thought?
I feel like that's like a thing people do.
I actually have like I saw like deeper meaning in it. Okay. Like this is the beginning. Like this is a subtle move
okay.
into
throwing
like,
pies.
I feel like it would have made more sense if it were just like rotten fruit or something. Like
yeah.
why did everyone
it's
like
weird.
Bake their own pie specifically for that day and then
no,
bring it to throw
it's
in?
Literally
like,
people
just a waste.
No, guys, it's a thing that people do. It's an actual thing people do as like a way of protest.
Yeah.
For an authority figure to like make fun of them. Or,
yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
like, this
is that is a
like,
thing.
This is a calculated
but,
thing.
So to me, regardless of the logic of it,
like, there's
a
list of people who've
sense.
Been pied on Wikipedia, guys.
Okay, I'm glad. If it has a Wikipedia article, it means it's legit.
Yes, obviously.
For me, though.
It's on the internet, it must be true.
For me, though, the scene does work with the pies because of kind of how ridiculous Wu is.
Yes.
Like, I think once they get in the car, I just think that's like it's really funny and great. Like they're dynamic. I think it's a gusher. He's been hit with the pie. He's confusing his strawberry allergy with his bee sting allergy. I don't know. It's all kind of ridiculous, but I just think it makes it works. I don't know. I think it completely works. I don't have any criticisms of this.
I think it works with the ridiculousness and also just and what Sam was saying, like this is a thing and also it could be a warning, like Mako has to really be prepared now, like he doesn't know what could have happened.
Yeah, I guess. And Mako seemingly does a good job, but he still gets hit, right? So not that
yeah.
good of a job. Wu specifically said, I don't know what I would have done without you, Mako, and which is repeated later. And he also says Wu down when he realizes he's
that
hit,
was
which
great.
Is great.
Wu down.
Wu down.
I was like, oh my god,
yeah.
who says
I,
that?
I really actually really like it.
I really
people are going to be frustrated with our Wu love, but I don't know.
I mean, he's so entertaining. Well, we're also the same people who love Zhao, so
that's true. But I don't think Wu is bad. I think he's a good guy.
Yeah, no.
So
yeah. He's just silly.
Okay, Kuvira's train gets to the city. They got off. Bolin and Kai have a hug moment.
Kai is so tall. Goodness,
he's so big. Up so
fast. His of note, we didn't mention his voice being different. Yeah, that's of note.
No, I love his new voice. Now he's a teenage boy, and like I don't like him as much.
Inherently, yeah, he's not a cute kid anymore.
Sam doesn't like teenagers.
He would not be able to pull off the "aw, cute" line when he talks to Bison in original Airbenders.
No, I want him to read "no, please." Like I want really deep "aw, cute" line.
"Aw, cute." Yeah, exactly. Well, it's just me saying
his
it.
Voice, his new voice isn't even that deep, you guys.
It's not. The same though, yeah.
Yeah, it's
Skylar Brigman. Yeah, so he's actually like a kid around this age, so it would make sense that his voice changes like this. Don't expect Jinora's voice to be much different because Kieran Shipka's voice has not changed significantly. You could tell people are like, "Oh, these voice actors, what are they gonna sound like now?" But we know what some people sound like because they're actually on regular shows, like other than Korra, which records 3 years in the past. So that's an exaggeration. It's like a year and a half to 2 years. Bolin's hair, yeah, they comment on that, but then Opal is like, no, and then
no.
She messes it up again, and it's pretty great how it just reverts back to how it was, and they have a Bopal hug, and it's adorable.
Yes.
They say they miss each other.
I appreciated Bopal, but I didn't ship it, and like this episode I was like, yep. I ship it.
Too late. The train has already left the Bopal.
I shipped it, but
episode,
I didn't know how, but now the shipping has intensified.
305. Actually, I might be heading off the Bopal train. We'll see. Their
wow.
differences might
you're
be too.
Jump off
abandoned ship.
They're
why are you calling it a train? It's a ship.
Because
well,
there's a
on the
train
now.
Right there.
Oh,
so yeah. Okay. Kuvira says. Kuvira's like, oh my favorite couple. Which I thought was hilarious. Kuvira
yes.
ships it.
Another reason to just adore Kuvira.
She ships it, yeah. I do think she genuinely comes off as warm here.
Yeah, that, and like mm-hmm. The way she switches when she's talking to the governor, like it's like she has a switch and it's weird.
Yeah,
like,
there's
mean Kuvira and then there's like warm, bubbly Kuvira.
It's really like.
What is Opal's brother's name?
Batar. Batar
Jr. I did not recognize him at all.
He looks exactly like Sokka. That's all I'm going to say.
I know. I only talked about him.
Okay, no. He was on screen for a second, but he was the least shown of the siblings, and they did redesign his character. He looks older.
He's Sokka.
Yeah.
I'm so happy.
That he's a Sokka child, yeah, yes. Obviously. Yes.
That would be a Sokka grandchild.
Yes.
Taka descendant. Maybe he's just Sokka reincarnated. Who knows?
Oh my gosh, or that. I don't know which is better.
This is a scene where we get a lot of exposition here. Sue apparently still has, who we don't see in this episode, apparently still has not forgiven Batar. Sue has a grudge against Batar for betraying her 3 years ago. This is something that's maybe easily lost. So, and Opal is upset about this. So, my conclusion that I draw from this scene is that Kuvira kind of stages some sort of power coup over Sue 3 years in the past. And Kuvira is now in charge of the Metal Clan, and Sue is not in power anymore. And Batar supported Kuvira in this, and not his mother.
Oh. What a jerk son.
Yeah, for real.
Thoughts?
I feel like I don't know what other directions they could go with it aside from they just leave and go on this quest.
Yeah, and they
it has to be like her resources, and even in 3 years, like she had to have deposed.
I feel like I should be interested by this, but I'm not.
I don't know.
I'm interested in relation to Opal.
Opal, yeah. Opal makes sense.
In relation to Opal, yeah, but like, Sue's not here, and like, the sun's boring, and Kuvira's just like, rah, rah, rah. And
Kuvira's like, rah, rah, rah. Yeah, I think when Sue gets here, it'll heat up a
little
bit.
It'll be more interesting. So yeah. She's interesting.
Sue is interesting. So apparently the family is heated after Batar, and Kuvira left Zhao Fu.
And they're getting married!
And they're getting married. Opal is upset. There's rumors about Kuvira with Bolin's help. This is, I'm just going in progression of the dialogue, and Bolin's help and her fiance's ideas. And
Opal's like, what?
Bolin says, isn't that great, sweetie? So apparently everyone says sweetie, all the couples. And
I was actually okay with it.
Yeah,
that's what I call my dog.
Okay. Yeah.
And then Kai is just like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kai does scoot away in the background. It's really great.
Yeah, that's his signature. He just slides away.
Yeah. There's shots of Opal in the scene. Oh, I think she looks incredible. I don't know. Yes. I'm like fawning over her in this episode. I don't know. Anyway, continuing on. Also, she looks a lot like Korra. But we knew that, right?
Well, I guess we should They're say Korra person. Looks a lot.
Well, I guess Korra's older, but. How old did we establish Opal was in 305? 17? I think she said 16 or 17. I don't remember.
I don't know.
Anyway, I think she said 17. I think she's 20 now. Anyway. So Kuvira talks to the governor in private. Kuvira's generous offer is that the governor remains in charge under Kuvira's supervision and has access to the army. The governor says that you just want our ore. So this line, I think, was bad because they don't expand upon it more. And also, it doesn't.
You just want our ore.
And also, it doesn't make sense because Kuvira is taking over everything. So no, she doesn't just want your ore.
She's America.
She just wants to take over everything, right?
Like if she was only taking strategic locations, that would make sense. But it's 90% done.
I guess it's just Robert Morse like spouting
ore
stuff. I don't
is
know.
Code for oil.
Not that he. I'm just calling his character.
Well, and he's kind of like he's scrounging around for like idealistic reasons to
yeah
oppose her because she is offering like. everything he needs.
Well, kind of. I mean,
it's possible he's just trying to ascribe to her some negative, some greed factor.
Yeah, that's what I would. Yeah,
makes himself feel better about rejecting it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, also he would be losing power in this, right? That's the obvious
thing.
Yeah. Because he can't do it just on that, because he's a very selfless person. So if he wants to reject her, he needs to come up with some reason that.
Yeah,
makes
that's true. And we get the best line of the episode. They might call you the Great Uniter, but you are destroying everything.
Ooh, yeah.
I love this line.
Oh, this guy wants two attorneys.
I can't believe we got Robert Morse saying that line. That's incredible.
He won an Emmy as well.
Yeah, like, he's a legit guy, right?
He's a legit guy.
He's very good. And
he's just the governor.
He's the governor, yeah. And he said
again,
that line.
Walking Dead had a character just named the governor for a while.
I did hear that, yeah.
More parallels. Voice acting is
like... Oh, yeah, let's talk about Kuvira, because Zelda Williams
Zelda
voices
Williams.
Kuvira.
Oh, my gosh, it's just... I don't really know, like, much about Zelda Williams as a person, but, like... So I had no expectations for Kuvira's voice actor, but wow,
yes,
every line.
I mean, I don't think she's been in a ton, but I mean, I know that she's named Zelda because Robin Williams loved the Zelda
yes.
series, yeah. So he names her daughter Zelda, which is pretty great. And
the voice acting is just
so
amazing.
I think she brings a lot of depth to some pretty on the nose lines for Kuvira.
Yeah, definitely.
You can kind of hear, so Oliver Savah on AV Club, he pointed out in his review that he thinks that Zelda Williams brings some pleasure to Kuvira's like power hungriness. Like she's getting some sort of pleasure over making these like the demands and taking the bandits and stuff like that, which I think is a really interesting layer of depth to add to.
Yeah. I didn't notice, like, when we were talking about a lot of the lines being on the nose, like, I didn't really get that watching the episode, because I was hearing it, but when I read the lines, they seem that way, which is her delivery, it's...
Yeah,
I
think she's excellent, and I also, like, we were talking before about her being warm, talking about their favorite couple, I think she just sounds so dangerous, because she, like, kind of sounds genuine, but at the same time, then she just turns on a nose, and it's...
Like, when she gets into the governor's face, like, first of all, I actually liked that writing, like, what she was saying, like, the parallel structure of what she was saying to him was great, and then just, like, the way she said it, just, so good.
She's just perfect.
She is
perfect.
I'm very, very bullish on Zelda Williams as Kuvira, yeah. The governor says, I'll never turn the great state of Yai over to you, spelled Y-I. Again, I don't understand it. Why is that making an I sound? I don't know. You will perish unless you take my generous offer, says Kuvira.
Well, then, like the rebel
I
thing,
wish
like,
had
the entire
dialogue.
All that.
Well,
yeah,
I think
lines are really well written.
I think it is intentionally like this, right? Yeah. So, I don't know.
Good job.
Act 3. Kuvira said she will wait at the border for one day and not help.
This is the Old West. This is great.
Yeah, the border of the apparently state, because apparently they're thinking that states. Opal, please. Oh, that's what Bolin says. Bolin actually just say Opal, please.
Yeah.
Opal rejects. Opal's very mad about this, that Bolin's leaving.
It's great.
And I just don't understand how Bolin is rejecting this and leaving Opal. Like, I don't get it.
Like,
how?
Well,
she's perfect. Like, what are you doing? And
I think that it makes sense that he would leave, because
he seems very happy
just following orders, and Kuvira does not seem like the type of leader who you'd want to cross, and
not one to make waves, so like, abandoning the army, no, he wouldn't do that.
I think it's that, and I also think he's very satisfied in his current role. He just seems very happy on in the past.
I look forward to the inevitable conflict of him being in Kuvira's army. Like, I'm really excited about that.
And we see it in the trailer, him fighting one of Kuvira's mecha tanks, so we'll inevitably get there. So, Opal rejects the hug, Bolin leaves.
That made me really sad that she rejected the hug. I was like, no, I just started shipping this.
I know. I'm like, you go, girl, but yeah.
Yeah, Opal's quickly, she's just basically, you know, she had a pretty decent introduction in book 3, and then book 4, like this, her in this episode, like I'm expecting her to become one of my favorite characters. I'm really excited for Opal.
Well, that already happened, right? Like this episode. I think she'd an incredible introduction in episodes 5 and 6, but then she didn't do anything the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like,
and now we're back to just her just
incredible. I'm really excited.
Also, props to Allison Stoner for just bringing a lot of fierceness, a lot of genuine, like you can tell she really doesn't like what's going on, like, from Alison Stoner's dialogue.
Yeah, but it's not, like, over the top. It's not melodramatic.
Well, I think it seems just very genuine, yeah. Like, yeah. She says we can save, or one of them says we can save this town ourselves. I think
Opal says it, and the way the line is delivered is incredible.
Yeah, well, she's just incredible, so.
Yes.
Yeah. So now we get to see Big Lefty, who apparently is, like, a mature bison in 3 years.
Apparently 3 years, and you get giant bison.
Yeah, well, other animals were, like, lions and cats and, like...
I mean, bears. We just don't know anything. We don't know that much about the sky bison. So.
Yeah, we don't know.
Do sky bison, like, do they all have humps right behind their heads? Because I don't remember seeing those.
I think that's part of the new breed of bison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe
I don't know.
That's what makes Lefty
That would make sense, but I don't know. Yeah. So now we got a great scene. Well, they get the food from the guy, and then they go back up in the air. And they say,
oh, I love this scene.
Yeah, so what? Which one of them is talking about this? So Opal's talking about it's tough having a long-distance relationship with Bolin. She can't stand him working with Kuvira. Kai says, he's growing up, and Opal says, I just hope we're not
It's really bad when a 14-year-old's, like, refers to you as growing up. When
yeah, that's true.
Well, like, I mean, as no, weird funny, as it's becoming from Kai, it... It does make sense, though. Bolin is growing up.
It's just funny, because Kai says
I just hope we're not growing apart. I don't know. Opal, like, I feel you, Opal.
Yes.
I don't know. You kind of are growing apart. It's not really a hope.
Episode in, there is time.
So, like, I feel like I'm totally on the Opal train here. And just, why does she need Bolin here? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, Bolin's just kind of a mess, and he's latched onto this.
She doesn't need Bolin. Bolin needs Opal.
She's got enough going on. She doesn't need a charity case here. Yeah, I'm just totally
that's why,
like,
I want
you're
to
so mean.
Totally being harsh. Yeah,
you're
Bolin.
So mean.
Anyway,
oh my gosh.
I don't know.
Like,
I do
I
like
want Opal to have her own arc, but I don't know how we can have Bolin characterization without Opal, considering how they're going right now.
I'm too pro Opal in this. I'm not.
Like, no, I'm so about Opal, but I finally want Bolin to have some characterization. Because Opal's newer. Bolin's been around day one. No characterization. Please.
Yeah, we'll see if they.
Although maybe now that we have Wu to be our comic relief, we could actually give Bolin character development. Wouldn't that be awesome?
We've heard that before.
I'm hoping that they can both
depart. I think we have questions on that later. We'll talk about that. Speaking of long distance relationships, how are you and Jenora doing?
It's confirmed. Right. Oh my gosh.
Actually, we're doing fine, says Kai.
Oh my gosh.
Great.
I was so, like,
are they
15.
Writing letters? Please tell me they're writing letters, please.
I don't know. I mean, theoretically, he goes back to the hub once in a while, right? I don't know.
Well, I don't, like,
This would have been more effective.
Out, so they're there?
I don't know. They're not permanently there, right? I don't know.
Well,
they just
well,
get
my
there.
My thing is, like, were they sent directly from the hub, or were they somewhere else and then sent
Yeah,
then
it's
sent
not,
there,
it's,
like,
it's not clear, yeah.
Yeah.
This would have been more effective if Jenora said one line in the episode.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Frustrated Dylan about Jenora.
There are 12 episodes to make up for the lack of Jenora.
I'm skeptical.
I like that Kai and Opal are partners. Like, it just makes
sense. I do like that a lot. It's like, wow.
I'm also...
We're
seeing
something in Korra where it's a boy and a girl and it's just friendship.
Yeah, I don't know how Kai's not crushing on Opal, but it makes me approve
because he has Jenora. Have you
so,
seen
right, so
Jenora?
So that makes me approve of him for Jenora, as my fatherly sense.
Yes.
But yeah,
yes.
I don't know. I would totally be gushing over Opal
though,
if I was Kai. I don't know.
He's got to get Tinsen to approve, and then it's K.
I don't know if I approve. We're going a little far there. But it's all a step in the right direction. So now we have this action sequence with the bandits in the sky. Ponytail guy comes on.
So much
fight
sequence.
Speculation on
the
sky, and he's a bandit.
The short
he's still attractive.
The short thing is that they latch onto the bison, they try blowing him off, but he's still on. They get the supplies, Kai goes after them and falls off. And I think there's some really great choreography for this, and like some perspective shifts, like around the cargo and with the airbending. I thought it was very effective.
Really cool. We haven't really seen fights like on a bison before.
I was like, don't you dare hurt Kai. He's like, when he got hit.
Yeah, he did get hit. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really react to that much, but yeah.
I thought he was like, if he had actually been injured, I probably would have reacted more. But then when I was like, oh, wow, even though he just got slashed at with a giant double-bladed sword, it just ripped the top layer of his clothing.
Which was important, because...
Good thing I didn't have to be concerned. Well, yeah, but then, I mean, Opal was there, so I really wasn't worried. She has things under control.
I'm looking at this now, and... It looks like after the luggage is all freed, and it just seems to float away, like because that plane could not lift that luggage because it's like mounted unevenly. It would just tear that thing out of the sky. So
I don't know. The only
explanation I can see is that ponytail guy has entered the void and is
flying. I was gonna say the luggage has entered the void.
So there's like a post speculating on, I think it was ponytail guy being a former metal bending from Zafu person that was in the dance thing.
A lot of people think that Kuvira sent them.
Yeah, and then that who was in the dance troupe with Kuvira. Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but people say that. And then there's the speculation that Kuvira sent them, which we'll get to at the end. So Kai falls, Opal goes after, they saves, and Lefty is happy. He closes his eyes and smiles. I don't know how Lefty can be happy, but yeah, he is apparently. They have emotions too. Like in Avatar, Jeff. Appa expressed happiness by like grunting. Like here, we actually kind of see him smile.
They're not the same. They have their own personalities.
This breed of bison can smile. That's the difference.
Yes, it's the most important.
And who knows? Maybe Appa was just stoic.
Yeah.
Dylan, haven't you ever seen a dog smile?
Oh, that's my favorite
thing. This is so cute.
We don't need to discuss the bison more. Okay, the governor signs the contract. Did I ever really have a choice? Says Robert Morse. No, you didn't. Yeah, it was predetermined. And Kuvira knew it.
How did Kai have it in the like? Is there a pocket? Because they snapped that thing open.
There's a snap compartment, obviously.
Where does that piece of paper? Like, did he have it the entire time when he was flying? Then where did it go?
Yes, he did. Died. Answer yes. Short answer yes. He had it the entire time. So now we're back at Air Temple Islands. Jinora's feeding Pabu. They tried to assuage me by putting in this incredibly adorable thing. You can think of the most adorable thing ever, which is Jinora feeding Pabu, and then her smiling after. But it does not assuage me. Don't think Josh Hamilton. But that being said, I
thought Pabu was like missing.
Yeah, Pabu's not with Bolin anymore. Yeah, but that being said, this is the most adorable thing ever, and Jinora's great now. Yeah. So then we have the Milo moments.
That was great.
Milo felt
kind of out of place.
It was certainly out of place. Milo the boy is turned into Milo the man, and then we have him with like the cartoony picture.
What the heck is going on in the background?
The crazy picture later. This is the thing that I compare this to most is the Aang dressing up in the outfit in whatever season 3 episode that was. And
Milo the boy has turned Nightmares into
and Daydreams.
Was that Nightmares and Daydreams?
Yeah, it was.
Him in the armor shop?
Pants. Yeah.
Okay. No, that was Sokka's master.
Sokka's master, yeah. That's what I compare this to the most. Cool. Yeah, it's out of place. I mostly neutral on this. I mean, I thought it was interesting, but I don't know.
Icky looks adorable. It looks, yes. She reminds me of Starfire from Teen Titans.
Yeah, she kind of does.
Icky says things in this episode. Yeah, no, she's really cute.
Yeah, she says her voice is so high, it's great.
I don't think her voice has changed. James,
she doesn't talk as quickly, though.
Not a whole lot.
It doesn't seem. It seems like she's less hyper now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And more done with Milo.
Rohan is precious.
He has,
I didn't even see him.
It's because you can barely see over the table because he's a tiny 3-year-old and he's so cute. Anyway,
he at the very least he's on top of Tenzin's head in the earlier scene.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Mako is going to Ba Sing Se with Wu and the great exchange with him and Lin.
Oh, it was so great.
Yeah, Lin's great.
My favorite character with my least favorite character. Yet I love their interactions. They're like buds.
It's pretty great.
Like Lin, it's so great. And then Lin like feels bad about it.
Yeah.
And I predicted this. I was like, Lin's gonna have to give Mako some bad news, and it's gonna be hilarious.
This was a scene when I was like, wow, I actually really like Mako in this episode.
And then he like grabs Lin, and Lin's like, what are you doing?
I mean, I liked the bad was befalling Mako. Does that count?
Yeah, yeah. And then Lin going, well, my favorite is how Lin's like, well, I hate to tell you this, but like she was, it was just really great. I don't know, we haven't really seen that
they're
much
buds.
From Lin.
They're
like,
buds.
Awkward Lin is my favorite.
Awkward Lin. Lin is always awkward, but yeah.
I know, no, she's like, this is like awkward Lin on a whole new level here, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I think it is great. Wu personally asked Raiko to have Mako accompany him. Okay.
Lin's like, I tried, Mako, I tried.
Well, no, let's save. We'll save this discussion for voicemail. Just a pawn in Reiko's diplomatic game.
Good.
But then the Southern Water Tribe ship is here, and we see two people shout, Korra, but one of them is not Jinora. She does not move her mouth in a speaking position.
We just skipped a scene.
I don't believe so.
We're skipping the element going back into the town. With the robots and the food.
No, that's...
That's after, I believe. Yeah, that's after.
No, it's not.
It's mentioned after. Right, it's mentioned after this in the outline. Shh.
We kind of missed Wu talking to Raiko about the rap. Which it's not that important, but it was funny.
We cannot. There's a lot of stuff in this episode we do not have time to talk about. Iki and Milo shout Korra. Asami and Jinora look happy, but they don't say anything. That's annoying. Asami, fades into the background after this.
Jinora has become Asami in this episode.
And then Asami is initially not Asami, but then she becomes Asami again. Yes. Okay, so we're back. So
in the age of radios, how does this mess up happen? Like.
That's what I've been trying to figure out.
I'm supposed to see my daughter. It's like, no, she's not here. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, how do you figure? Come on. Like, how did this happen?
Tom Rex just dumb. That's what.
Don't say that.
I mean, he kind of is.
Is Tenzin? Or is Tenzin dumb? Like, who's at fault?
Tenzin is
dumb.
Okay. So Kuvira's army and the mecha tanks in EA. And
oh boy.
So
they come off the thing, the children play with them and stuff.
Another thing that would have been amazing if we hadn't seen it in the trailer.
Yeah, Mecha Tanks would have been like, what's going on here? They give food to
people.
We haven't
ever seen those in Korra before. Ha ha ha.
That was totally necessary, thank you. Kuvira says, pledge your loyalty to me. And he does, even though both the line read and the look he gives are not genuine. Yes, yeah.
And now she's humiliating him.
It's
great for her characterization, I should say, yes.
Seems like she's taking some pleasure in this.
She is the pie thrower.
No, I don't think so. And Opal is not pleased with this and looks at Bolin, and Bolin's like smiling and blushing, and then she looks away, not happy. So this is kind of why I'm maybe hopping off Opal here, because I agree with Opal here. Not happy.
Yeah.
Bolin not being super sensitive.
I want to know why Bolin's hanging out with Kuvira. I want to know that.
He's enlisted.
He gets to hand out food to everyone. They touch upon
like he wants to help people.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
found his calling. They say and stuff. Mm-hmm. Reference to the episode of The Calling later. No, not.
I would assume that whenever we'll get the flashbacks of whatever happened 3 years ago with Sue, that Bolin will be involved in that.
Maybe. Yeah. We'll see. Naga and. And Tonrak.
I was so relieved to see Naga. I can't express.
He's alive.
I'm pretty sure this is in the right order. I don't know why I would have just cut into a scene here. But Korra left 6 months ago. She wrote Tonrak letters saying she was there. But then where is she?
I was shocked she left 6 months ago.
Yeah, that's a long time. By the way, Jinora, not visible in shots of the crowd accompanying. She's literally not there. Like, I mean,
she's busy.
She's not busy. She went outside with everyone else. Presumably,
she's writing a letter to Kai.
Presumably, she's behind someone tall. But like, wow. So
she is tall.
She is tall too. Now, genuine. Like, other than her being my favorite character, like coming out of book three, there's two really interesting storylines. Right? There's what are we doing with Korra's character, and what are we doing with the new Airbenders, specifically Jinora, the head of the new Airbenders, except. We get a lot of new Airbender stuff, and Jinora is not even a part of it right now. So I do think it is a plot issue. I don't think it's just, like,
well, we see Kai and Opal out. Jinora is supposed to be in charge of stuff. Is she being trained, or is Tenzin being overprotective, or do they just want the family together like usual, and they're just sending Kai and Opal? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
So
you would assume that Jinora
why is Jinora not doing things when she's a master? Yeah she seems to just be sitting there.
Busy off-screen doing master things.
Well, I mean, I guess they could have kept her back to see.
I don't think we can say
I don't know.
She what?
It's only the first episode, Dylan.
Exactly. We can't say too much about.
Well, she's not going to be in the next episode, so.
Well, Dylan. Neither is anybody. Nobody else is going to be in the next episode either.
I mean,
it's going to be all Cora all the time.
And.
People, everybody's so happy.
Yeah, yes. That'll be great. Okay, so now we get to see Cora. Cora with short hair in the Earth Kingdom arena punches at her. She's standing there getting pummeled. Then she gives up. The guy comes up to her later. Lackluster participation.
Lackluster.
You kind of look like that Avatar girl. I get that a lot. Whatever happened to her anyway, I wouldn't know.
Oh, this was so great. It was so great.
So, yeah, I don't know. What are your feelings from hearing Cora like this?
Well, her tone, like I was seeing stuff on Tumblr and like dark, like new Cora, like old Cora, like season one Cora versus like she's just a darker person. Like the way she, and even like how her lines are being delivered, like she doesn't sound like Cora. Does that make sense? Like there's a darkness to what she's saying, which like adds to what's going on.
She needs to figure out who she is. She's taking a break. Okay, she's taking a break. She's getting in the fights. She's taking a break.
So I think I think this is very effective holding her to the end of the episode and then showing her in the state, right? I think it's save the most emotionally impactful thing for the end.
Especially as a segue to the next
episode. Yeah, I think the big question is, did this episode suffer at all? From the lack of Cora until now.
This made the best impact. Yeah.
Jeff.
Less coherent. It would have been less coherent.
I think I like the decision not to include a third source of plot, right? I think I was worried that they'd just have three giant equal A, B, and C plots here, but we're really only getting A and a B plot, and I think the episode's much better for it. And it's fine leaving Cora to be the most emotionally impactful moment at the end. I think it works.
I mean, it's her show. Yep.
Well, she wasn't in 20 minutes of this episode, so.
The show is named after her.
It is? Really? And since when?
Maybe. I don't know.
Scenes go well. Like, it was just a very good idea to the end of the episode, because they keep talking about Cora coming back, and then, like, I just, like, the only, like, really the best way to do it would be this way. I can't think of.
Yeah.
Like, they had to be at the end, and they made it as emotional as possible.
Yeah, I think it really worked, and it's great for next episode.
And I think it's one of the strongest aspects of the episode is how they end it.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. I'm ready for this.
Ready for the grading now.
No, I'm ready for.
For
Cora.
You ready for the grading for Cora?
I'm ready for the grading. If you don't make me go first.
Well, first I should say I apologize if you hear background noise with me. Not preventable. This will be a common theme this year. In an apartment, can't prevent background people talking noise. In the common room. That's annoying, even if I don't record at night. So, I don't know. Okay. Grading out of 10. This is something we do.
Is
on
it?
This podcast.
It is a thing.
10? Okay, let's try to establish this again.
We should spice up the grading scale.
No. We tried that once, and it was a disaster. We did that for book one, at the end. Okay.
Oh, I remember. This is a,
like, if you've ever seen Faking It Fridays.
No,
I gotta share that to you.
So, this grading scale is supposed to be consistent throughout any episode of television you can ever watch, right? So 10 is the best one you've ever seen. Let's remember that, because we had some heavy discussion on Mel grading the finale of book 3 of 10. So if you're grading something at 10, it's the best episode of TV you've ever seen. A 5 is an average television episode. Not just an average core episode, an average television episode. And I think it's important to grade episodes because they can be judged on their own. I don't know. This is also especially focused episodes, like I think this one is. So let's start with, since Delaney complained, let's start
with... Did you say Delaney? Did you really almost call me Delacy?
Well, I'm about to say Teresa, because you guys are the same. So,
yes,
Teresa,
same.
What would you grade this episode out of 10, and why?
Oh, no! I think... I was initially going to go with, an 8.5, but I think that's too high now.
Why do you think it's too high?
Well, because, I don't know.
Are you going to give it, first of all, then, justify?
I think I'll just give it a solid 8.
Okay.
Because it didn't blow my mind, but I was very happy with it. Mm-hmm. But I think some things, mostly, I know I said earlier that I thought everything was given the perfect amount of information, but I take that back because I did not get the amount of information I wanted about Sue being upset at whatever the
How about information about Janora? How about that? Well,
that's no shush. About like the conflict in the Beifong family. That was not really like I wanted a little bit more from that. So I don't know. I'm bad at grading. I give it an 8, and that's what I'm giving it.
Okay.
The end.
Thumbs up. Jeff, out of 10.
I'm gonna give it a 7.5, and I'm just doing that to leave the series room to grow.
You're gonna let them grow into the score. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And any further grading thoughts?
Nope.
No further grading thoughts.
That's it.
Delaney, it is your turn.
Oh, okay. We're all well aware of I'm terrible at grading. I'm probably gonna look back on this and say it was a little too high because I kinda wanna do what Jeff's doing, but I'm just gonna go with my gut, you know, giving it room to grow, but I'm gonna give it an 8.75, maybe even a 9.
And like, pick, I know pick I said, one.
Because
pick one.
And I said this wasn't necessarily like an okay, a 9. I'm giving it a 9.
Okay.
Because it's like I said, it wasn't amazing or incredible, but it's such everything that it attempts to do, I think it succeeds at. It's very solid. There's not one moment of the episode that I was irritated at or disinterested in. It was just a very solid, great episode, and that's why I'm giving it. And I'm going to regret this in like 3 weeks, but that's what I'm going
to
give it.
So theoretically, other episodes should not change your opinion of. This grading scale is supposed to be universal, so it shouldn't be affected by later episodes.
This is true.
Okay, but anyway, Sam.
I think I'm just going to give it like a 5.9 out of 10.
That's not a 6. You couldn't bring to give it a 6.
No, yourself. I was thinking about 6, but like, it's very, very average. Like, very, like it happened. I don't
it
know.
It did happen. You didn't have strong feelings about
it. I didn't have strong feelings about it. The only reason why it's not like a solid 5 is because of Korra at the end. Like, I'm really excited about Korra and about where they're going to take her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about that. That's the only reason why the 0.9 is there. Okay, the end.
All right. Ha ha ha, my turn. You all in your puny low grades.
No, Dylan, come on. You are
I gave it a 9, bro.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha. 9.5 out of 10.
Whoa.
Pretty...
Oh, I knew it.
It wasn't that good,
it.
Dylan.
So,
I agree with
I'm that. A huge fan of episodes that are self-contained and that are like very good within themselves, like that are very, like Delaney said, this episode is literally accomplishes everything it sets out to do. Every single scene succeeds. I think this is maybe the first episode ever which has done that in Korra, and we've gotten some incredible Korra episodes, but this is one of the great ones, I believe, and I believe it is the greatest Korra or Avatar premiere. I think this does a good job of getting me invested in characters who I don't previously care about, like Opal. I mean, I cared about Opal, but like.
And a strong villain introduction.
Other than Janora. And especially the biggest thing it does well is Kuvira's introduction, which I think is perfect. So, the only reason. So literally, this episode did nothing wrong. So, why is it not a 10? I believe it's lacking some of the super impactful moments that are necessary for the truly, truly great episodes. I think this is worse than the stakeout because it doesn't have a moment like the end of it. However, I do think on average this episode is better than the stakeout. Like, the average scene is better because the stakeout had some questionable stuff in the beginning. Not questionable, just some low-key stuff.
Like, there are highs and lows, and this is, like, straight awesome.
This is just
like,
straight good
line.
The entire way.
Yeah.
Incredibly, incredibly bullish on the season. I can't believe that Josh Hamilton wrote this premiere script. Like, I think later in the season, the script becomes more questionable, but this is just a complete success for the first episode, which they've previously struggled with, and they correct all flaws, and there's no bad scenes, and it's just great. Okay, we have a lot of your feedback to get to, but first, let's get to Mel and Britt's feedback.
They're saints. thoughts?
Mel thought this was an average episode, a typical premiere. I disagree, as I've said.
Agree.
Mel says, Kuvir, I like the idea of an opportunist warlord villain. Love that she's female and younger. I like the possibility of them exploring her, and the Avatar is two sides of the same coin. I also like that unlike Zaheer, she's not a people's hero type character, but clearly feared slash disliked by a good number of people she conquers. Yeah, so the interesting dynamic is, what do the people think of Kuvir, right?
Well, and then where did her title come from? Because if it comes from the people...
It's presumably comes from the people.
Yeah, and how she interacts with the people. Like, the people love her, they're getting food, this is great. But then how she interacts with them in private, like the bandits and with the governor. So there's duality to her character.
Mel says, I'm interested to see what the difference is between conqueror and uniter. One could argue the Earth Kingdom might be better suited abolishing its monarchy, not just because of the incompetent rulers we've seen sitting on the throne, but also because it's too large to be properly governed by just one person. Districts or states might do better. To that end, we end up setting up Kuvir as a possible fascist leader. It will be interesting, and I imagine that we'll see the abolition of the Earth Kingdom monarchy by the end of this. So the thing with the Earth Kingdom monarchies, it's not clear that that's what's going on. Yep. We've kind of heard the Earth King, but then they're just kind of ruling... passing say and not
well even
really
in Avatar like we had Omashu and Bumi was king of Omashu.
Yeah, so it's not really clear what's going on there.
Yeah,
so that wouldn't be super impactful, I don't think, because we don't know what's going on. Elias Mel says, I like that Korra wasn't seen until the end. Enough suspense was built up by the time skip, and last seeing her injured worked very well. I'm interested to see her story in the next episode. Yes, obviously. What exactly is the public opinion on the Avatar? Republic City is pretty chill about her being pieced out for so long, but the fight promoter made it seem like the general consensus opinion of the is that the Avatar disappeared again. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. No real thoughts on shipping except yay for Jinkai. Good job, Mel, for using the proper name. I prefer
yes.
Nothing for Korra right now is Endgame. Something like Buffy's cookie dough speech
yes,
in the series
I'm
finale.
With yes,
so. Yes. Interesting to see how many people theorized we'd be seeing the end of the Avatar this season, but it looks like, as of right now, they flipped the arc to complete a This Is Why the Avatar Is Needed story.
Yeah,
so,
like
okay, more thoughts on this in a minute. Is Korra being sucktastic at earthbending a result of A, her physical condition, B, her mental condition, or both? That's a good question.
Yes.
Or is she intentionally taking a beating?
Yeah. Which, that could be part of...
Yeah.
Well, she could be a mop, but she could be, like, this idea of, like, she's suffering and, like, wanting to, like, she can't feel anything anymore, but she can feel earthbending hitting the face.
Yeah.
She could, we don't, it, this could be masochism, we're just not sure.
Wow, that just hit me really hard in my feels.
Yeah, that's what
that's too real right yeah. now, the
That's
lady.
How I kind of interpreted that scene, honestly. I also think she's physically impaired, and that it will
yes.
affect her bending. It is interesting.
But she's doing this to prove herself, to prove that
to
she's
try to prove herself or something.
Yeah.
It's interesting. This Mel back to Mel's thoughts. It's interesting to see Korra regress back to punching her problems. Literally, by book three, she got very mature with finding diplomatic and spiritual ways to deal with things. In the wake of everything that happened, though, she's returned to a state of using physical aggression to deal with issues. In this case, inner turmoil. You can't punch your feelings, Korra.
Yes, you can. Shut up, Mel.
Okay.
Everything she
Don't
tries.
Don't listen to anything Mel says.
Yeah, Korra. It's why wouldn't Korra just not go to what she did in book three? It didn't, she got destroyed as a result of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because the very last thing she did, right, like, no, there was nothing, like, because she got captured and that was it, as far as she remembered, right?
Oh, I think, then, I don't know if she can remember what the Avatar State stuff was, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well, even if she did, like, it just, I'm sure she doesn't look at it very fondly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Britt's thoughts, we talked about her shipping thoughts. Britt says, I never thought I'd miss Bolin by making badly timed inappropriate jokes, but I do. Or am I very at least nostalgic for seeing him serve as a soon-to-be dictator worries me. I know he will come through in the end. He will love Team Avatar plus Opal more than he ever will fear or follow Kuvira. Bolin's very,
I love Opal
Bolin's very
more
emotional.
Than I fear you.
Yeah, exactly.
Please.
If Kuvira is amazing. I love how they made her an actual person with feelings and morals, however twisted. Well, all their villains kind of have feelings and morals except for Unalaq. For Opal is all I ever hoped her to become, and I hope her and Bolin settle their differences. Okay. If Raiko thinks Kuvira is going to let that empty head teenager boy rule over the largest landmass in the world that she just spent the last 3 years bending to her will, he is officially dumb enough to run for political office in the United States.
Wow.
I don't know if my reading that did it justice, but...
Yeah, I think close-ish.
If
maybe.
Kuvira... No, she's saying if Raiko thinks Kubera is just going to step down, he's dumb enough to be a U.S. politician. That's Britt's opinion on this. My main concern is for when she gets all of the Earth Kingdom under one rule. If I remember correctly, that giant map she has on the wall has Republic City marked as one of the states to be taken. So we'll discuss this in a little bit.
Is it even a state?
It's nothing's a state. There's no states. They just brought states up here.
I thought Republic City was supposed to be like the United Republic of Nations and supposed to be at some... We don't know. Doesn't make any sense.
Because Mongo says earlier in the episode he's not even an Earth Kingdom citizen.
Yeah, it's separate. It's Republic City. Correct.
Like,
it's not.
It's like Republic City's like Washington, D.C. and like it's its own thing. Like they act like in comparison or like...
Well, no. It's not part of the U.S., right? It's separate. Separate. If the Earth Kingdom is the U.S., the Republic City is the United Nations.
Puerto Rico.
So it's not officially... It's not official.
I meant it's its own autonomous thing within the Earth Kingdom. But
it's
yeah,
like the Vatican.
Yeah,
it's like
the
Vatican City, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was actually going to say next.
Six, if not, I predict it will fall by the midseason, and then she goes after the Fire Nation this season. So that'd be interesting if she fails or succeeds in the Earth Kingdom and goes to the Fire Nation. Seven.
It'd be nice, give the Earth Kingdom a break since it gets conquered every 2 minutes.
Overall, my ranking is 9 out of 10, which is the highest I've given in 3 seasons, I think, says Britt. So Britt's very bullish on the episode. And Britt wants me to plug her Masami blog. I don't remember what it's called. Let's
really,
go on Tumblr.
It's great. I'm trying to remember the crap.
I can figure this out. It is worth it for the name. Shut up, yeah, I ship Masami. .tumblr.com.
Yes, go follow it.
Okay. Before we get to your feedback, let's what did Mel say that I wanted to talk about more?
Punching your feelings.
The only thing that I want to talk about, no, not that, is the Mel says that it seems like they're going for Korra figures out her role as the Avatar as opposed to Korra realizes that the Avatar shouldn't exist anymore.
Oh, that'd be so much more interesting if Korra's like, you guys don't need me anymore, I'm just gonna no thanks.
So I agree.
And she dies.
It seems like she's already there, so we gotta go back to that point.
So I think these are two sides of the same coin. I think we're gonna start with maybe Korra comes back, fights Kuvira, she sees that the world needs her. But then there's something that happens and she goes back to this maybe what she's wondering right now is that the world doesn't need her at all and she maybe abolishes the Avatar whatsoever. I still think that's where they're going with this, and this is the general theories part of the podcast.
Well, it depends on how much they're gonna how long is this stuff with Kuvira gonna take, because if they do it that way then the showdown with Kuvira has to happen in the middle of the season.
Well,
I'm gonna be completely honest, I want Korra to die.
I want
her to die.
I would prefer something something drastic happens.
Sam.
Then, so I would much.
Korra is dead by the end of. The
I would much
series.
Prefer. I mean, it's Sam's being callous here, but I would much prefer Korra. I am being callous. I would much prefer Korra. Either loses herself as the Avatar or sacrifices herself, rather than we go through the stereotypical building up her back as the Avatar role arc.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I think that would be much less interesting.
Or at least a changing of the role of the Avatar, what the Avatar means to the world.
In regards...
I don't think the Avatar needs to be abolished for it to be an interesting plotline.
No, I agree. Nothing specific needs to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, and in regards to Kuvira and Korra's showdown, I believe we'll see that within a few episodes, because they will cross paths, as we saw in the trailer.
Yeah.
So... I mean, where they go with Kuvira is going to be interesting, because
I'm really excited for Kuvira.
It's this entire season; they have the potential. They could do basically anything they want to. So I kind of doubt they're going to stick to the stereotypical villain route. So I'm just not sure specifically where they're going to go. I also don't think we have enough information here.
Yeah,
I feel like the coronation might be a nexus point, or it's
it
was oh yeah, Kuvira, you've been doing great. Now pledge your lands to me, and she's like, no, actually, not.
She pulls an Azula.
Yeah, but that's kind of where we're going with this. Like, it seems like I feel like we're going to go beyond that too, right?
Well, the coronation is soon, so there's a good chance it's in episode 3.
Yeah, it seems like I think the coronation will be episode 3 probably.
Yeah, I think 3.
So one of the routes they could go here is Kuvira trying to take back Republic City. I think we have a voicemail. Oh no, we have a voicemail, so we'll wait for that. In general, I think that I still think we're going towards a place where we're gonna have something drastic kind of happen at the end.
Yeah.
So in general, my my big theory, I guess. I kind of had this crazy Rava becomes the villain theory a few podcasts ago. Okay, I'm going to step away from that one. But I will keep the Korra casts out Rava as the Avatar thing. Because here's why. If everything's about balance here, I think Korra is going to look back at what happened with Juan. And she saw, okay, everyone is wrong in that the physical and spirit world should be united. She determined Juan and the rest of the Avatars were wrong. But also, Juan's initial involvement in breaking up the Rava and Vatu entanglement might have also been wrong. If the season's called balance and we're striving towards true balance in the world, what better to establish it than to establish balance than having chaos and the opposite of chaos, whatever
and
they call Rava.
Says chaos and order, and it's kind of they could happen.
What
you know?
What?
I don't necessarily agree with you.
What
but,
better
like,
to have them than to them to revert yeah. to the state? In addition, there's other ways in which the world is currently not balanced. One of them is the existence of separate nations. Certainly, we could go towards some abolishment of nations altogether this season. Another way in which the world is not balanced is that some people have bending and some people do not, and there are different types of bending. As we predicted last season and did not happen, seems like one way to solve this is by giving everyone all bending powers. So these are possible directions we can go to based on balancing the world at the end.
I don't necessarily think that's like imbalanced so much as like the interactions between them are unbalanced. Like the whole issue with Book One.
Yeah, but also it's just innately imbalanced, I believe. I think the problem isn't that it's innately imbalanced. I think the problem is how they interact.
There
but,
can never be balance.
So that's kind of some things to think about. But it doesn't. None of those seem apparent from what we know so far. But at the same time, what we know from the trailer is probably only the first few episodes, because they are still working on post for, I would say, at least the last four episodes, maybe more. They were recording recently. It was unclear whether they were recording for a video game or for the show, but it does seem like they're recording for the actual show, doing some late ADR, because... Seychelle tweeted that she was there and posted a picture, so ADR is not the last thing they do in post either, so we still have some more posts to go. I don't think Jeremy Zuckerman probably has not finished the finale score, or maybe even got significantly working on it yet, so we're kind of far out from the finale.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll see. Okay.
Which is interesting because Mike and Brian said like this is when Book 4 was supposed to come out. Book 3 came out.
Is
the
yeah, so this is their normal thing. They were. It should be noted, Book 1 of Korra's finale, they were working on that until a few days before. It's atypical that they've done with the entire season before it starts like they were with Book 3.
It's just how art works.
Art goes up to the deadline, apparently. Okay, so let's get into your voicemails and questions. For the voicemails, I'm going to be cutting a lot of you guys off here and only sharing portions because I really can't be playing over a minute, over 90 seconds of voicemails. I'd much prefer if you have super long thoughts to send them in an email or an ask. So I'll try to play the most relevant parts of it. Also, please try to not send multiple voicemails because I have a limited amount of space on SpeakPipe and it's going to run out by the end of the month, so we will not be able to send voicemails. But we'll start with Greg Serafin, who, G Serafin on Twitter, I wrote an article for his website recently, Sensible Reason, and it's awesome. And here is his, this was the last of three he sent, but we'll play this one.
Hey guys, it's Greg again. I never heard to send two of these, but upon a third watch, I realized that Kuvira says, "I won't celebrate until the Earth Kingdom is 100% reunited." And looking at the map, for the most part, the areas of the map that were not indicating that they had sided with her were the United Republics. So that makes me think that Kuvira at one point is going to move against the United Republic.
Yeah, so we kind of started talking about this. It's the reason that this would be a logical progression of the plot is because the Earth Queen has mentioned that this in Book 3, the existence of the United Republic is an affront on the Earth Kingdom or something like this. Seems like Kuvira might arrive at the same conclusion.
Which is funny because Wu he's been given asylum within Republic City.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Because like they're protecting him and they're supporting his rule.
Yeah.
So, it's very intriguing.
And another side of this is that apparently Kuvira's map, I saw a Tumblr post, Kuvira's map, the parts that she hadn't taken over, one of them was where the swamp is, corresponds to. I don't know if this is true. Sometimes people can flub Avatar map things. Like, it's not necessarily clear where everything is on the Avatar map. But that could lead to the confrontation between Korra and Kuvira that we see in the trailer after Korra comes out of the swamp, which probably is next episode. Who knows, though? It seems like if next episode is just Korra, that's a lot of stuff with Korra we need to cover, Korra's journey.
Two-part episode.
And we still have scenes from when she was in the South Pole.
I assume Brian would say, we have to flashback to. I assume Mike would say that it was a two-part episode instead of, because he said in the IGN podcast, this is episode two. So I assume he would say 2 and 3 if it was 2 and 3. Okay, next we have Cody from Brazil. I'm playing this from not from his introduction, but from halfway through. So here we go.
I really liked her, but I think that she was kind of too much of a villain.
Kuvira.
She could be just a person trying to follow her own interests. She didn't have to have the villainistic eye. And I figure, like, since you're trying to make this more grown up and more mature even, I don't know if these characters are really caricatural, really, really need to exist in this kind of season, you know. So let me know what you guys think about it.
Yeah, so there is another side of this, people being necessarily unhappy with Kuvira's characterization. Maybe people think she comes across as too, is that what he said, like too villainous here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I considered that for a while, I feel like it's just how you take it, because I feel like she's being communicated, like, and we even talked about how she's more relatable than villains we've had in the past, so it just, I feel like it's either or thing and how you take it, but I personally think that it's shown as,
I think both. maybe
she can be a villain, or is her own interest, or is it really a bad thing?
Maybe some people have maybe some people have a problem with her like being portrayed in a negative way initially, right? But they do this with like everyone.
She has this duality. We see this warmth when she's talking to Opal, and then we have. I think we need to see more before we can really make a judgment call on exactly how they're characterizing her. I will say at this episode, there's a bit more negative than positive, but I think it'll just depend on like what more we see.
I just loved her. I think she was portrayed not necessarily as like a super evil, and she's portrayed in an antagonistic way, but not necessarily as like a super villain.
And even if she is presented that way, that doesn't lessen like the impact or what a great character she can be.
Yeah, I mean, it's just preference, I guess. But I don't know. Yeah. I disagree. I guess I thought her introduction was great. Now we have a voicemail, which I have to remember to cut off at 15 seconds. So hopefully I do that.
Hey guys, this is Tungao. Well, this was a very good episode. But what I really want to do is to celebrate my new one true pairing of Mako and Prince Wu. I have a song that I think might be the best song.
Okay, I cannot play this Tungao singing the song. Not because I don't love your singing, Tungao, because it was great. But because
I saw the Tumblr post.
It has a word that is too inappropriate for the podcast, I think.
Do we get to listen to it later?
I guess if you guys want to. Anyway, the thing to discuss here, that was a great voice of Tungao. I'm sorry, I can't play it in its entirety, is Mako and Wu. And I have a quote to read from you from... I guess I mentioned it, but then started not talking about it. Oliver Savaz, AV Club review of this episode of Korra, which he gave a B+, too low. And about Mako and Wu, he says, Prince Wu may put the moves on Asami, but he's definitely setting off my gaydar with his flamboyant personality, affinity for luscious spa treatments, and obvious affection for Mako. I get the impression he's interested in Asami because he wants future industries, but he's interested in Mako because he wants Mako. For the record, Oliver is gay, so I don't know if that affects whether he can say stereotypical stuff. But yeah, thoughts on this?
I can walk around and say stereotypical stuff all I want.
That's how it works, yeah.
That's how it works. I have privilege.
Right. Yeah, well, it kind of is how it works. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
I think it's a funny idea, but...
It's an idea, but I just...
I certainly got the impression that he's, like, really likes Mako.
I got that, too. Like, he thinks him and Mako are bros. He really likes Mako.
Yeah, like, they're bros. I don't see...
Like, he's like that clingy friend.
Yeah, it could. Which and what's the difference between that and liking someone, right? It's like
No, I mean that doesn't. Okay, there's not like liking someone like doesn't necessarily inherently have to be romantic, and it doesn't lessen their feelings if it's not romantic. Like he really likes Mako.
And I think they could. I don't know. I might be on board. The what is Tugel made a post about this. What is the?
I think
the
ship I could ship it.
I think I'm gonna ship this because it's a Mako ship that's not Nakora. Wuko is the official ship name.
Wuko, are you wow?
Wuko. So we're gonna
ship
that.
Mawu.
That would be funny too. Actually, okay. We're gonna go with that. Okay. Now we have several Tumblr asks from you guys.
Before we do that, I must duck out.
Oh yeah, we're gone. Okay, thank you, Jeff, for joining us. Bye.
There's one little tiny random thought I wanted to put in somewhere, and now is, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
So, in the recent review or the interview with IGN, I guess about Core and everything, they said that we're glad that we were able to keep the 3-year time jump secret until the trailer because you know stuff gets leaked all the time. And they also said that the reason they do this trailer is so that because things get leaked anyways, they want to make sure that they do it the way they want to do it. I just find that really sad that they're forced to work with Nickelodeon, who find themselves incredibly inept at managing these spoilers and leaking stuff like the Zaheer killing the queen early, like all these things. Like if I'm the creators, like I they're gonna leak it. They're gonna leak it sooner or later. So I have to release it now under my own control. Like,
yeah.
Why can't if they could work better together, they could really pull off some amazing reveals, but it just won't work. Thankfully.
Yeah, I think the time skip and specifically was probably going to happen in the trailer anyway because they just like making trailers. But yeah, it was certainly interesting how much it seemed like spoilers, like they're aware of them and are like cynical of it, and it's kind of sad. And
they're held hostage by the network. Yeah. It's sad.
Yeah.
Anyway,
thanks, Jeff.
I'll let you peace. Thanks.
So yeah, okay, so let's get to some of your guys. Oh, also Michael sent a voicemail before the episode aired. I got it, Michael. I listened. Thank you very much. But non-episode relevant voicemails, I do not think I'll be playing for episode discussions. So send them after the episode airs, but before we record. Which, if you have questions about Dylan FTSW, I'll post on my Tumblr every day when we're recording. Not every day, every Friday. And then you can see there. All right, Jack Gherkin says, I love the episode. It was a great way to kick off the season. Now, is it just me, or would it be cool to see a Game of Thrones-like title sequence with all the nations throughout the Avatar world? It's like someone kind of made an edit of the Game of Thrones thing with Korra. But yeah, especially because we're getting into like specific Earth Kingdom states now, like it's getting confusing. That'd be cool if we open
Hunger Games. Who produces what?
if every episode we opens like going to the locations, that'd be good. Anonymous on Tumblr says, "Do you think that some of the bandits, possibly the ones who attacked Opal and Kai, are under the orders of Kuvira? Bandits attack towns, Kuvira swoops in to save them, bandits conveniently disappear, being the general plan. Did she get those earlier bandits to swear her loyalty? She did get those bandits to swear her loyalty to her, after all."
Maybe.
So this is a very stereotypical, like, Avatar plotline, right? This is totally something they would do.
Didn't it happen before? Why do I feel like this... Varric... Didn't Varric do this?
Varric did something similar to this. Similar things in, like, Jet and other stuff, you know?
Jet did it.
Yeah. Well,
my thought on, like, obviously it's a very typical plot, and they could very easily, this could be it. But I think just based on, like, Kuvira's, her statements and the way she acts, I feel like this idea would be abhorrent to her because she really thinks she's this great uniter. That so she, you know what I mean? Like this would like contradict or challenge her own image of herself.
Yeah, I don't agree with this theory for that reason. Actually, I think Kuvira's character
was really
weaken
her character and it'd make me very upset.
It was very solidly established, and I don't think we're going to go the route of her just being putting on one face but doing something else. I think it's just more like her idealism and stuff like this and power hungriness is going to extend further. Not that she's like backing on what she's saying.
Yeah, I think it'll sort of be very similar to Zaheer in that. They are true to their own ideas.
Yeah,
they're not like Amon or.
Yeah, I would. I would. I could see them doing this, and it would make sense given what they did in episode one. They didn't have it at the end, like some people thought they might, but at the end of the episode. But I don't want to see this, and I don't think they will. All right, next. Escalations says Jenora didn't speak meh out of 10 for that reason alone. I feel you, Escalations. We feel you.
I should have given the episode this that grade.
Meh out of 10, yeah. Escalations story.
About, I don't care out of 10.
That is not a number. Nope, not a number. I don't care out of 10 is not still valid, unfortunately. Anon on Tumblr says, since our first look at Korra this season seems to be identical to when she finds Toph, does that mean Toph has been fighting underground the whole time?
Yes.
Watch please. Korra's next match be against the Blind Bandit, and Korra will be all, I don't believe it, Toph. Thoughts?
Yes.
That'd be awesome, except no. setting is no.
But I don't think so. But yes, it is. It does seem like the Toph is coming soon. Yeah. Toph is coming soon.
If we get Toph next Friday, I will die.
You will die. Oh, wow, that seems extreme.
Because, well, you remember with Iroh when I was in the floor? Well, I was expecting Toph to be later this season, and I will be underground. If, like, I will be with Toph, but dead, because I can't, I can't even think about
okay,
it.
Okay, but speaking of Toph, so there have been three mentions, two or three mentions of enlightenment in Avatar and Korra combined. The first one is in the swamp, when Hugh says he's reached enlightenment at the something tree. And then the next thing we see is that Toph apparently is in search of enlightenment. It's maybe foolish to not tie those two together and think that Toph is in some way enlightened or like in a heavy meditative state when Korra reaches her, or in some enlightened state.
And we can't rule out the fact that the first time we see Toph is in the swamp. That is our first ever...
I mean, we can rule it out because it doesn't have any plot significance.
But that's what I meant is that, like...
it's thematic significance, but yeah.
Well, it would make sense. Like, our first and last...
Thematically, yes.
Our first and last scene with Toph.
It's interesting that Toph would reach enlightenment because she's, like, totally not spiritual. Yes.
Yeah, it's...
Like,
I hope we actually talk about that because it's not... It's like, not... Like, what? Toph, what?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Hopeful Wanderers Things says, can you guys please talk about the only legit thing that bothered me? How in the background of the train station scene in the first 5 minutes, the background people always held these awkward positions and did not move at all. Was that just me, or have they always done that? The issues really stood out to me, and I also thought the last line should have been executed better, but I love Kavira so far, and just my thoughts. Love you guys, the podcast. Right, thank you. I don't know. I didn't really notice this much, but I think it is there because I don't know.
It bothered me the first time I watched it, and it really bothered me the second time I watched it. Ooh.
Sometimes they have stagnant backgrounds for effect. Yeah, just to show panning over or whatever. I don't know. Anon says, I think book 4's premieres tops book 3's for a few reasons. Fresh air, a breath of fresh air, had to address book 2 and divert attention away from establishing a central conflict, although it achieved a premise. I liked Korra's mission, comparing the endings I give it to the book 4 premiere. I felt surprised and genuinely intrigued by Korra's state of being because it was unexpected. Fresh air left mystery on Zaheer's motives, but it didn't shock anyone. We warmed up to it. Glad episode 2 is what it is. Thanks. Okay, around the horn... Book 3's premiere, Breath of Fresh Air, Book 4's premiere.
So long ago.
Delaney, which is better?
So, like, okay, Book 4.
Teresa.
Wait, what are we saying?
Book 4, which is better, Book 4 or Book 3?
I don't even remember the Book 3 one.
It was literally 3 months ago.
You know what? I don't have a good memory.
Life?
I guess Book 4.
Sam.
Even though I gave it an average thing before.
Okay, yeah, and I think it's book 4, although both are, I think, incredible episodes.
Of yes, television. In my mind, it's more interesting than the book 3 one was.
Because Korra,
and okay. 3 years in the future.
3 years in the future, yeah.
And book 4 delivers, like we've talked about, like everything that it attempts to deliver, it delivers on. And then book 3, obviously we were really impressed with it, but it had lows. Like, it wasn't as consistent.
Nick has changed their graphic to new episodes every Friday instead of Korra premieres this Friday on their website.
All right, then.
Good job. Nick is actually very good with changing time graphics and promos and stuff like that. I don't know.
One thing. Yeah. They have to be good at something, right?
Yes. Okay. So next week, we get the scene of Korra leaving initially in 3 years ago to go to the South Pole. We get Korra's journey. Apparently the episode is all Korra, or mostly Korra, says Mike.
Good.
I am heavily anticipating this.
I'm so happy.
I think the entire fandom is.
Yeah, so that's going to be it for this week's podcast. I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Delaney, Sam, Teresa, and Jeff. Carhorn. Tech directors AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Music artists the Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Chapel, Logan Brandon, Kevin Dunkling, Zombie Jack. Contributors Garrett, Sierra, Nick, Devin, Lexi, Coin, Gretchen, Britt, and whatever. Who is Iroh's name?
I don't know. Irene?
No.
It's on Facebook.
It was on the Jasmine Dragon tea shop on Facebook. That's the more important one.
G-Money, Sierra Miss, Nick at Night, Rudy, and Tabuti, Coin, Fetchin, Opal, and Iroh.
Yeah, those two were done in your absence, I think, Opal and Iroh. Yes. But...
Well, Opal is Brit, great. Isn't it?
Opal's just Brit, yeah. Okay. You can go to dongwufeng.net/podcast, and you can there see donation information by clicking on Donate at the top. Whatever you want with that. And you can click on podcast bios at the top to read about us. They're not updated as of, like, the semester of school or whatever. And there, and you can see Teresa's new drawing of Allie.
Put that up?
As a new airbender. It's there, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I have to go look.
And it's great.
My drawing. I have to go look, too.
And I think it's her best one, and Allie
might have
great
to
as
ask
well.
You to edit mine to give me a mohawk.
Yeah, no, I have to do that.
She's doing new ones for everyone. I need to be...
Yeah, Oh my gosh, I'll redo them all, okay?
I was just making it to
Allie.
Okay, I was joking.
Allie's still not a master of note. So, yeah.
But she has Core in the background. That's all she wants.
And yeah. I need to be new Airbender. Also, Allie apparently is drawing me and her, like, a comic of us as Airbenders. So that's going to be great.
Really? Teresa and I are sisters and bending. And
oh, yeah. And then there's a sister's
there's
drawing.
A big tragedy. It's great.
Great. So there's this very angsty drawing of Teresa.
Okay. Okay. So if you want to get in contact with me, ask me literally anything. DylanFTSW.tumblr.com/ask, I think, is how asks worked on Tumblr. And I'll answer it, and it shows up on my page, I guess, unless I answer privately. If you have any podcast questions, you can ask there. You can email us, Dylan@dongwufeng.net. These guys' Tumblrs are going to be linked to from the Dongwufeng Tumblr's post about this podcast, dongwufeng.tumblr.com. Everyone's following the Dongwufeng Tumblr
recently. My
Tumblr's
a train wreck.
And
do I need to become Guru Kubira? I wonder if...
Wow, these are the questions. Dongwufeng, Twitter. Follow us on Twitter @dongwufeng. Come post about this podcast on the DS forums. Give us feedback there. dongwufeng.net/forums. That's a good way to write long form feedback on the podcast and our thoughts. And I will reply. I will look at all the forum posts and the podcast thread.
And I stalk the forums. Love the forums. Please post.
I should stalk the forums.
Yeah, you should. Thanks for the iTunes ratings. No one has rated us since last time. You can rate us on iTunes.
Review.
Get us up to 200 ratings. That'd be cool. And
don't we like iTunes reviews too?
We like reviews, like obviously. The reviews are the best ones. Say who your favorite co-host is, and it's probably Sam. And
definitely Sam.
Then you can send us voicemail. Please, please keep it to 30 seconds and only send one. I'm literally going to run out of space like in 2 weeks because SpeakPipe has limit on free storage space, and I don't want
to
pay for it.
Find another thing.
Yeah, I don't know. If you want to send long form feedback, I think it works just better as a Tumblr ask or an email. Anyway, there's a character limit on ask. Send more. I don't know.
Use the submit box on fan mail.
No, I think I have. You could do fan mail. I think that would work. I don't think I have the submissions on, so you can't do that. Someone tried to submit something, and then it looks like I posted it. I don't know. I don't like that. Anyway, that's all. We're under 2 hours. Congratulations.
What
do
How did that happen?
I don't know. What do we want to end on? What do we want to end on?
Kuvira.
No.
Yeah.
Fun things happened. What was the bath called? The spa.
Oh, no. Nice.
Tea leaf.
That's too much. That's too much for one.
No, woo down. Woo down.
No, but that was just briefly mentioned.
Woo down.
I don't know.
I kind of like that.
Lackluster participation.
Lackluster.
That's not.
That's just another way of saying that there isn't enough enthusiasm.
Not enough enthusiasm. That's a good callback.
You will perish, sweetie.
There's nothing. There's no standout one. We didn't have any good jokes, did we?
Bandits.
Very serious.
Bandits? No.
Bandits. We'll just end
You're
on
bandits.
Strawberries versus bees. No. They're confusing allergies.
Bees?
Yeah. No. Okay, I don't know. And
my
sister
is allergic to strawberries, and my mom is allergic to bees.
This is a personal thing for Sam. Yeah. Okay. End on whatever you want.
I don't remember. I had something. Oh, I know.
I think woo down works.
Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3. Woo down.
Woo down.